Welcome to 50 Things, a podcast series brought to you by the Institute for Futures Research at Stellenbosch Business School as we celebrate our 50th anniversary. In each episode, we dive deep into the milestones, innovations, and people that have shaped our journey and the world around us. Additionally, we cast our eye on the future, discussing potential developments over the next 50 years. Join us as we explore the past, present, and the many possibilities of tomorrow through engaging stories, expert insights, and visionary forecasts. 50 Things promises a journey through the pivotal moments and ideas that define our institute and our collective future. Enjoy.
I'm Doris Viljoen, Director of the Institute for Futures Research at Stellenbosch Business School, and this second episode of the series, our guest is Professor Philip Spies, who directed the Institute for many years during its early days. Welcome, Professor Spies.
Thank you.
You were the director during those very early days of future studies at Stellenbosch University, when it was still sort of a new concept and people didn't really know what this was. Please tell us, why did the IFR come about?
Okay, that was, it started with the first Club of Rome report, Limits to Growth, with Dennis and Donella Meadows, the senior author. And in 1973, Anton Rupert delegated Tom Besaito, who was his director of information management and also his sort of advisor in a lot of things in technology and so on, to attend a meeting of the first presentation of the Club of Rome report. He came back to South Africa and motivated Anton Rupert to initiate a similar exercise in South Africa. Anton Rupert started the phone around, and he established what was then, from then, called associate organizations, who each promised 4,000 rand. At that stage, it is probably in today's money, 80,000 to 90,000 rand a year. And the first group was about 30 of these companies. They had the intention, they had the money, but they don't have a place to put it. They asked around at the university, and finally they decided to put the exercise at the Bureau for Economic Research, supposedly as a long arm of the Bureau. The first, actually, the director or head of that new initiative was Trevor Williams. And he had an assistant, Piet de Toey, who was a specialist in quantitative work in economics. Piet, very soon after that, walked away because he couldn't use his stuff there. But also the question was, which road should we go? At that stage, Riaas van Wyk, who was then professor in business economics, was tasked with the exercise to investigate the way the research program should go. There are two options. The one an issue research, which was more or less what the first Club of Rome report was all about. And the second one, which I think was a very good decision, was to understand the context. Because if you understand the context, your quality of prognosis improves about the future. So they departed with the institute with the idea of environmental scanning. The way they manage this is to take each of the environments, natural environment, economic environment, and so on, and bring out bulletins and then other reports on each of them. 1976, Riaas published a first publication on that. I don't know whether you still have it here. I have it at home, where he published what I would say the first environmental scan. Perhaps a precursor, but not quite so, of the business futures on later years. But then, of course, the first period of support ran out, and I think Trevor Williams got afraid of what will come, and he resigned, and more or less in 78. And for about 6 months, they functioned without their head. And in the meantime, they appointed also a person, André Spier, to do what they thought was a scenario exercise. He essentially walked around and talked to various people and wrote it down. He never came to writing up a scenario. I was then asked by Tom Besaito, it's a strange occurrence. I was at a sports shop to buy squash balls. He walked in and he said, well, I think you should go to the institute. I knew him from a friend of mine who was professor in biometrics. And so I thought about it, and I was appointed as the head of the institute. The primary function of that institute was, straight from the beginning, service to institutions and companies. And it was a lucky choice because South Africa was in deep trouble for at least 15 to 16 years. And it was a wonderful environment to start and an effective futures research program. And this is how the institute developed. And I walked into that place without any background in this. And I had four seminal books. Aquila's environmental scanning, mm-hmm. which was essentially his PhD thesis that was published. Bertrand Jovenel's Art of Conjecture. And there was three books, three. And then, of course, Russ Eckhoff's Creating the Corporate Future. Those three books and a tape recording of a presentation of Russ Eckhoff shaped the development of the service design of the then still the unit for the next 16, 17 years. I soon realized that future studies is not per se an applied economics project. It's something different because it's multidisciplinary and it requires systems thinking. My interest in systems thinking started in the 1960s already when I worked on my master's thesis. For the next 3 or 4 years, I developed a different course with this thing. And then I started to motivate my steering committee and the board and the university that the unit should become a separate and fully fledged institute of the university. I also tried to convince them at that stage that we should have a program of education, training, because there is a clear interaction between that. If you only focus on the one and you exclude educational part, you miss out because you're not developing people that can work there. You can't progress in this field and so on. But I couldn't convince them because there was the dogmatic belief that institutes should stay away from teaching. And André Roux then, after I left, succeeded to change it around. Any case, I worked on that in 1984, at a certain stage, we established then the institute at the Dana Meadows. I invited Dana Meadows here, and it was also the year of the first publication of the Business Futures publication.
Wow.
Then my second objective was the placement of the institute. And I from the beginning, I believed it should move to the business school because the business school is multidisciplinary and future studies should be in the real world part of business development. I started teaching business futuristics on request here in 1980. We were still then at what they called the Baboon Walker on the other side at the Bremer Hospital. So for about 4 years after that, I worked to move that institute from the Schumann building to this building and say, okay, you can come here, but you have to build your own offices. So I have to take my own money, and that one wing was developed with money of the institute, which we earned outside. But in any case, in the end, we came here. I remember Elizabeth Dostal was very, she didn't agree with me and so on. And I had a little bit of a bossy moment. And I said, well, we go there. We will simply go there. So this is why we ended up here.
Lovely. Those are such cool stories to hear. Mm. Now, last year, the World Future Studies Federation also celebrated their 50th year. So the IFR and the World Future Studies Federation is more or less of equal age. In those early days, it was also the early days of the field developing. You've mentioned some of the seminal authors that you use. Are there other influences from international people that influenced us and our influence outside as well?
Well, the World Future Studies Federation is a very good institution because it propagates future studies and methodologies and so on. Especially at that stage, that early stage of the institute, of the unit and then the institute, it was not a methodology that can be applied sufficiently well so that we can get our associated society. And if you can't do that, then this is why I'm interested in effectiveness. In my searches, I had that. I walked around and I visited each and every associate and talked it through separately. Say, what are your questions and so on? And I came across the Royal Dutch Shell series of questions, which I also applied. And I gave it in the class at certain stages to these people. And it came around that they want to understand, not know the future, but understand the future. And this is why we emphasized in environmental scanning and why we moved towards Person Futures as a publication, as a divergent scanning publication, providing even what I will call for some useless information. Because how do you know what you must know if you still don't know what the future will be? So what are the questions you should ask and that kind of thing? I made a point to visit similarly oriented institutions overseas. The best one, I would say, in terms of scenario development was Royal Dutch Shell offices in London. They produced people like Pierre Weck and Swatch, who was the leading guidelines in scenario work, to such an extent that their four-quadrant scenario work became a standard practice, which I feel, I don't think it's the only way you should go. As a matter of fact, for me, scenario develop is a learning design, not a practice, something that you walk into a planning session and do a four-way classification of the futures. It is a little bit an exciting exercise, and it's beautiful to look and listen to, especially if it clamps onto us that presenting it. But as a matter of fact, of changing human minds, of being effective, it's a problem. Another thing that came into the game, also from Royal Dutch Shell, is the idea of a learning organization, of a learning design. And there, Arie de Geus was a guy. Another, of course, is linking up with the work of Russ Eckhoff, was the work at MIT, and especially then Peter Zenge, the fifth discipline, and the stuff that came out. So I motivated Peter Zenge to come to South Africa, Arie de Geus to come to South Africa. And the way we push this on is through learning. We had regular meetings on topics where we actually go into a teaching exercise with our companies, teaching them about how to develop scenarios, why you should do it, and also systems thinking itself became a major thing. And I financed systems thinking from a contract that I received from the then Bantu Development Corporation to investigate the success of their development initiatives. And I asked the question, how should we approach it? And I answered myself through systems thinking. And I appointed masters cum laude in philosophy, Martin Dots, to do the work. I had a chemical engineer also doing economic structure studies. A chemical engineer, because the economics department couldn't provide me with a quantitative capability. So each and every one, we not only introduced them, we had regular courses, short courses, sometimes a week course, sometimes a two-day course, but we had continuously doing it. Some companies like, for example, Eskom at that stage, helped me a lot in doing that and bringing in people. And so, and I think they were responsible for Peter Zenge's visit. Shell was responsible for Arie de Geus's visit to South Africa. I brought a number of foreign people of a similar nature to South Africa. I had Jamshid Garajadaki here a couple of times and Ras Eckhoff here a couple of times to talk to people. So this is how we developed it. And if you ask me what was the worth then of the World Studies Future Studies Federation, I think basically on the academic side, on the pure development of the capability, or not the methodologies, they made a useful and a very powerful contribution. And I would, if I can highlight one that I believe that is perhaps the most important one, was causal layered analysis, because it linked also in with the environmental scanning and how you should bring it in. Dana Meadows was one of our greatest supporters. They pulled us into the Balaton group at that stage when South Africa was closed. For Joan and Elizabeth Dostal went to Hungary to the Balaton group. They had interactions with Russians and they had interactions with all the people around the world. There was no problem and we worked quite well. I also interacted with Jerry Barney, who was Jimmy Carter's Global 2000's director, and he put me on his board for about 4 years, so I was part of that issue, and the Millennium Institute developed out of that exercise. So that there are a number of others that I can't remember, but this is how we developed. Parallel to the World Future Studies Federation. World Future Studies Federation opened the debate on methodology, but we focused, how can we change the world? And this is where measuring and making the future came out.
Cool.
Not forecasting, not prediction, measuring and making.
You've already mentioned a few interesting projects and things that you were involved in. And during your tenure, you produced really valuable information. When I had to unpack one of the storage units, I almost got lost in all of the beautiful reports and things that there were. But please just point out one or two things that you think was really interesting during your tenure.
Well, the first, of course, was soon after I arrived here. Well, I just may add that one of my actions was to appoint what I will call specialist coordinators. Herman Gillemy was my first political specialist coordinator. And Jan Gillemy, his brother, was an environmental guy, and he gave me valuable things. And, of course, structure studies. I had Adi de Vries at the stage and so on. So I had people from the university. I paid them a certain amount of money to help me with the various disciplines. Herman Gillemy, in an interaction with Anglo-American, motivated them to do a study on the urban-rural interaction. So our first study was on the movement of people. Why they move, what they move, and so on. A report that came out is on rural interaction. That was published in 1984. The second one was an invitation from the Natal Town and Regional Planning Commission, who said, I must ask me to forecast the future of Natal and KwaZulu. That is an intense exercise in which I used environmental scanning as a sounding board. The point is that if you want to converse with people, the first point is to get agreement on certain benchmarks. And environmental scanning, which is well-articulated, well-researched, is one of those things. So I had meetings in Pietermaritzburg, and then Buthelezi invited me to Ulundi, and we had another series of planning meetings there. And out of that one, and you can't remember, you're still too young, came was the KwaNatal Indaba, was a product of that exercise. We talked about the process constitution. The third series was in support with Ogilvy Mather, Wrightfoot, Sultrup, Macon, and also National Intelligence and State Security Council, two of them. The one of I had what we call the New South Africa scenarios. The theme was not adaptation like what they talk about, but a revolution, but an alternative revolution. So the first one, we walked around the country and gave a series of presentations on the New South Africa. The National Intelligence and the State Security Council invited me to also produce a series of meetings at the Skilpadsaal in Pretoria on this topic. Now, I'm not saying that the Institute helped to change South Africa, but what I'm saying is here was two exercises, parallel exercises, on scenario presentations running from 86 to more or less the beginning of 89, which I believe did influence thinking. We started off with what was in business futures. And another interesting one of my junior researchers, a lady, came to me and said, I believe there's a problem with malnutrition in South Africa. And I said, okay, motivate, why are you saying this? Listen to her. I said, okay, I will allocate money. We started a research on what's happening with young children. The conclusion was that by the age of four, if a child is malnourished, your whole workforce is affected by that. So we ran that program in an interactive way, phoning people, sending out and asking all our associates participating. We had a conference at the Libertas Center, and I arranged that poverty dinner should be presented with all kinds of what the stuff that they eat at in the townships. Out of that exercise came out Project Hunger. A number of companies and control boards promised and did their support for a hunger project in South Africa. Again, pointing out the important thing of future studies is not forecast the future, predict the future, but to change the future. Mm-hmm. That is what it's all about.
I want to touch on a seminal article that you wrote about the effectiveness of future studies. Because, I mean, if we're effective, we followed the methods right, etc., but then effectiveness. So please, your one-minute overview of what is effectiveness and why it's important.
I won't go into the brain research, but I want to point out, in terms of your behavior pattern, the cognitive dimension, the affective dimension, and the cognition dimension. The first one is to observe and see what's happening, see the facts. The second one is about how it emotionally touches you. How can you relate to it, and how does it emotionally? And the third one is to do something about it. Now, I wrote that article perhaps also because of my feeling that much of future studies focus on the first one, ignores the other two. And this is the basically in 1 minute why I wrote that article, and why I also explained that the learning design is so important. And this is why I also earlier mentioned why I took so much time to in short courses and presentations and so on, but not just about methodologies, but something that people can, in the planning environment of companies and institutions, can relate to and apply in their decision-making and their development.
Cool. Thank you very much. In closing, a fond memory or an interesting incident, just to say goodbye, one something.
Well, I will not use one incident and one fond memory, but I can say this, that in my years at this institute, I had the best people working for me. And I hope working for themselves. I believe that you should allow people to develop their interests and do their thing if they're capable to do it. And I had wonderful people doing wonderful work. Rokens de Lange, the doctorate in chemical engineering, dropped his job at the Wits University, came to this institution and developed a SAMHSA model, which was the basis of the kickstart strategy of the old mutual network scenario, in which he pointed out that under certain circumstances on self-help housing, it will not cost the government one rand through the multiplier effect. The SAMHSA model was, of course, a formal applied input-output model adapted to also the social dimensions. That is one example. Martine Dots and her fund that she brought into the institute. We had fun at this institute. We had grand parties at each meeting. I always believe that when you work in situations, you should work with people, not with apparatchiks or with institutions. So therefore, all my planning exercises, all of them must start with some kind of a party.
That sounds exactly right. And that's why we're having a whole year of parties to celebrate the 50th anniversary. Thank you very much for your time, Professor.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on 50 Things, a podcast series brought to you by the Institute for Futures Research at Stellenbosch Business School, marking our golden anniversary. Stay tuned for more episodes as we reflect, explore, imagine, and shape the world of tomorrow. If you're interested in getting in touch with the IFR, please visit our website at www.stellenboschbusiness.ac.za/institute-futures-research. Until next time, keep looking forward, and let's create the future together.